The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
What you said, a couple of you mentioned that in the anchor task, that it seemed like it was going so great at the beginning, and then the novelty wore off, and then it got harder. This is not an uncommon thing. You know, we do tend to engage with something when it's new more easily. So at this point, it becomes more of a resolve and an encouragement. Every time you remember that you've forgotten, again, that moment of remembering that you've forgotten is actually the point. It's not so much about the actual remembering the thing, although there are some things about that we'll probably get to a little bit later this week. I mentioned the intention, I think, on Sunday, noticing the intention to act, that being able to pick up on or recognize the beginning of an action gives you a window into that intention. But mostly right now, the practice of that anchor is to help you recognize when you wake up into mindfulness again. You know, that you recognize, oh, I forgot that. I forgot that I was supposed to be sitting down. It's serving its purpose perfectly well. It's doing just what it's meant to do. It's helping you remember this moment of coming into awareness. So just keep, every time you notice that, take that moment of being aware. And I think, as one of you said, there can be kind of a mundane mindfulness, a surface-level mindfulness that happens. And that's okay. I mean, just to know what's happening while it's happening. I mean, in the Satipatthana Sutta, the Buddha said, when you're breathing in, know that you're breathing in. When you're breathing out, know that you're breathing out. It's really kind of that simple. And also, you know, when you're bending or stretching your limbs, know that you're bending or stretching your limbs. So it's kind of a, there is that initial just sense of general surface level awareness that you have become aware. And I think I mentioned this morning, just that kind of the difference when you become aware of something between what it was like a moment ago when you were not aware and awareness coming back. That's a great reflection to explore. And if you are, in coming back into awareness, if you're coming into your task, like one of you mentioned, the devices, you know, doing things with the devices, if you're able to be with that for just a few moments, you could try, rather than a narrow mindfulness, just see if you could expand out a little bit. Maybe just ask the simple question, is there tension or ease in my heart? You know, so checking into the inner landscape in a very simple way to encourage a little bit of a broader awareness there. I think often with this kind of, often we're doing these physical chores, right? The chores tend to be physical, the anchors tend to be physical, and so there might be a orientation towards noticing the detail of the physical. The question can really just simply be, what's obvious here? Kind of step back and ask, what's obvious? And then just see what's there. I mean, the kind of surface level is there, but sometimes when you just check into that question, what's obvious? What else is happening here? What's obvious here? Something kind of unexpected might be there. Not that you have to go looking for it or figure it out, but just kind of open yourself to the possibility that something might be there that wasn't so present initially until you checked in and asked the question. Then one of you mentioned the difference in mindfulness when energy is strong and energy is not so strong. So that's a great thing to notice. Conditions impact our ability to be mindful. It's so helpful to recognize that and to not give ourselves a hard time about it. You know, sometimes the conditions come together to make mindfulness flow more easily, other times not. So recognizing that there are different conditions to the essentially as support for mindfulness. So high level of energy, having a lot of rest, having enough food, certain simple conditions can make it much easier to be mindful. So just acknowledging that and recognizing these conditions have supported the mindfulness. And you may not have control over those conditions all the time. You know, like, you know, I'm in a state right now where it's something's going on. I seem to have a lot of adrenaline going in my body, and I don't sleep very well. You know, it's like about 10 o'clock at night, that adrenaline just shoots through the roof, and I'm like, okay, I'm on this ride now. So not a lot of sleep, you know. So just recognizing that, that's a condition. That's a condition for how alert the mind can be. And then it's just, okay, make the best effort you can given the circumstances. Seeing the conditions, recognizing the conditions can help us to see essentially, you know, this is just a process. You know, I was talking about that, I think, the other day. Just this is just a process of conditions flowing. You know, we are not... we are not always in charge. We don't have control over our energy level. We don't have control over what's happening to us all the time. We have a little bit of control now and then, but much of the time we don't have a lot of control. And so this is actually an insight to recognize that we don't have control. It's not a mistake, actually. You know, it's not, oh, I don't have control, what am I doing wrong? No, it's, oh, I don't have control. This is the truth. This is the truth. So let's see if there's anything else. Somebody mentioned an absorption into the activity. Sometimes that happens, that what we're doing could be a task that almost requires more absorption. So this is something I played with as a computer programmer. Computer programming was a pretty intensive activity, and I would recognize when I was in that space, it was kind of like creating a mandala in my mind, you know? It's like I knew, it's like building a city in my mind. I knew where all the buildings were, what was in every room in every one of those buildings, and I could just go to that room and pick it up and do something with it. It was like holding all of it in my mind. That's a concentration practice. So sometimes with certain work activities, concentration is appropriate. So we may not be able to kind of track with that sense of observing how the mind does that quite so much. So it's kind of recognizing this is, again, skillful means, recognizing it's a suitability, recognizing what's appropriate. And in that situation, I began to recognize it was appropriate to be in that concentration. And then when I came out of it, when I came out of that space, it was also appropriate to put it down and not let it kind of walk around with me. So that's kind of what you're talking about, yeah. So there's appropriateness of level of concentration and level of mindfulness. There is mindfulness in that kind of absorption. I mean, there's a sense of tracking a context in that activity. But it's like there's more concentration than mindfulness. At other times, it may be possible. Like when you're washing dishes. I was on a retreat once and I was washing vegetables. And I think because of my habit of really diving into tasks, you know, I really dove into those vegetables. You know, it's like focus, you know, absorb into vegetables. And at some point I realized it's just vegetables. You know, this can be a little lighter here. So again, looking at what's appropriate with respect to mindfulness and concentration, that balance may vary in our daily life depending on the tasks that we're doing. So if you're doing something that has a kind of intensive concentration need, it may not be appropriate to try to back up and say, oh, what am I mindful of here right now? You know, let your mind go into that space, do that activity, and then when you come out, then it's, okay, where am I, and can I put that down? So, descriptions of experience, reports describing, yeah, I'm off now, I guess. So this notion of, you know, seeing the clinging in your activities, you know, and recognizing the unpleasantness of that clinging. I mean, that's actually an insight. It's, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, it's like, well, why would I do that? But that's what we do. We cling. We cling to things because we fundamentally misunderstand the benefits of clinging. Well, actually, we don't understand the drawbacks of clinging. And we misinterpret clinging as having benefits. So, you know, we think, you know, we project into the future. We think about the thing we're going to have, you know, or, you know, we move into the thing clung to, and that's where our attention is, as opposed to the feeling of clinging itself. And when we start bringing mindfulness to experience, we begin to learn about this feeling of clinging. It's not a pleasant feeling. And that is part of how this practice works. We become mindful of that experience, and it gives our mind an education. Is this really worth it? You know, is this really what I want to be doing? I mean, so often we're focused on the future, the thing we're clinging to, focused on, you know, keeping that thing, having that thing, or getting rid of it, depending. The clinging can also be the opposite. We can cling to not something. We're so focused on what life will be like when we either have or get rid of that thing that we're not so aware of the clinging itself. And so this practice of mindfulness begins to reveal that, begins to reveal the unsatisfactory nature of clinging. It begins to educate the mind in terms of the drawbacks of clinging. And this is really helpful, because when the mind starts to recognize that, you know, I think of the mindfulness as our organism. Our organism, our biological organism wants to be happy. Did I talk about this on Sunday? I did? Okay. So our organism wants to be happy. And it tries to find its way there, but it misunderstands how to get there. Like it thinks that this getting what I want, that clinging process, that craving and clinging process, is the way to happiness. I mean, it's seen it a bunch of times, right? We get what we want, we feel good. That's proof. It works. But we miss the fact that we've been suffering while we wanted, while we were clinging, craving. So the mindfulness begins to open up to our seeing that process. And then because the organism doesn't want to suffer, when the mind sees this craving is happening, this clinging is happening, it's unpleasant. It feels off. When the mind begins to understand that deeply, the mind itself starts to let go of that because it wants to move towards well-being. The body, the mind and body, the organism wants to move towards well-being. And so part of the process of our practice is allowing our mindfulness to meet these unpleasant experiences of reactive emotions, of clinging, of craving. Not resist them, not push them away, meet them, be with them. The mind and body system gets an education in terms of the suffering of that experience, and it naturally begins to let go of it. It's like that rotting rope. I talked about the rotting rope on Sunday, right? It's like the rotting rope. You know, gradually the mind learns that way lies suffering, and it starts to let go. So it's not even something we have to do. The letting go actually isn't something we can do. I mean, we can try to incline the mind towards releasing sometimes, but you know, you probably find, you know, in your example of clinging to reading a book, you know, you could recognize, oh, I'm clinging. Well, I should let go of that clinging. Well, good luck. Yeah, I mean, it's like the mind just latches on. So the best we can do, actually, often, is recognizing, oh, this is clinging and this is suffering. The mind will slowly, slowly get it. This isn't so helpful. So in my experience, a lot of the insights come through that gradual learning. And, you know, it's not something we advertise, you know, we don't put it out on the marquee there, you know, on that box that we advertise what's going on. We don't say, come in here and suffer, you know. This is kind of part of how the mindfulness works, that we really see it as suffering. But the benefit or the helpful side of it is that the mindfulness of that experience, we could call it, and it's some teachers talk about it as the meeting of mindfulness with reactivity, with craving, with clinging, feels unpleasant, feels we're clearly recognizing the dukkha, clearly recognizing the unreliability. That's the kind of suffering, when we're mindful of it, that's the kind of suffering that leads to the end of suffering. And there can be a distinct feeling, a different feeling around being mindful of craving or clinging, versus kind of being caught and driven by it. Now, there's a little bit, perhaps a little bit of space when we're mindful. So we may begin to get a sense of what it means for it to be the suffering that leads to the end of suffering, that we don't resist it so much because we clearly see this is headed in a wholesome direction. I think that's enough of that. We have just a couple more minutes if there's anyone else who wants to offer something.